VentureCast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This week on the Deep Leadership Podcast.
I encourage all leaders, think about what you've been through over the last 3 months, 12 months, and write down the stories of people embracing change, overcoming challenges, so that you can remind them when the next one comes of how they got over a previous hurdle.
Hi, and welcome to Deep Leadership. I'm your host, John Rennie. Well, I hope all is well with you today. It is another beautiful spring day here in North Carolina. And this episode is brought to you by our sponsors, LeaderConnect, Ignite Management Services, and Liberty Strength. These sponsors help me bring these shows to each and every week, so I encourage you to click on their links below and check them out. Well, today we're talking about leading change successfully, and I'm joined by Jeff Skipper. Jeff is an international change leadership consultant and author of the book Dancing with Disruption. We sat down and discussed why people find change so difficult and why it's so important to involve them in the change process. We also talked about effective communication strategies, dealing with resistance to change, and the need for continuous adaptation in a world of constant change. If you're a leader, you need to know how to lead change, and this discussion will help you do it better. So, are you ready to dive in? Let's get started.
Welcome to Deep Leadership. Leadership is a people business. That's the philosophy of your podcast host, John Rennie. As a former Cold War submarine officer who spent 20 plus years leading businesses in corporate America before starting his own manufacturing business, he knows that leadership matters. Leadership matters. Are you ready for some real world actionable advice from John as well as his expert guests?
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
The show starts right now.
Welcome to the Deep Leadership Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Jeff Skipper. Jeff is an international change leadership consultant for organizations in energy, finance, technology, and other industries. For over 25 years, beginning with a 12-year career at IBM, he has guided change projects by focusing on the people side of change. As CEO, he grew a transformation service company to seven figures in just 5 years, and his latest book is called Dancing with Disruption, Leading Dramatic Change During Global Transformation. And in this book, Jeff uses case studies from the pandemic to illustrate key strategies for leading dramatic change. And I'm excited to have him on the show to learn how we can all dance with disruption. So, Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. Please be here.
It is a pleasure to meet you. And I love the name of your book, by the way. So well done. I love this idea of dancing with disruption. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about change because you're an expert in it. So why do most people perceive change as hard? Why don't we like change as people?
Yeah, and you see this headline quite frequently that change is hard. And honestly, I can't stand that. It's really misleading for people. But the reality is our brains were built to make sure that we stay safe. And that's why we have the fight or flight response. So in our memories, we kind of flag things that were bad for us, that were dangerous for us, that created a threat. And we remember those most readily. And often those have to do with change. There's a change in the environment. Something new's come in, it's a threat. And you know, I had to deal with that. It was a struggle. As opposed to a change that's good, something we've adapted to, we are successful, doesn't stand out as much because it wasn't a threat to us at all. So that's just the way our brains work. We tend to recall more readily those things that were dangerous and threats. So I like to remind people, yes, there's fight, there's flight, but when change comes along, there's also flourish. There's lots of people who take those opportunities and turn it into something good. It's a way to make themselves better or, again, take advantage of something that they didn't have before.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think you're right, though, you know, in terms of
change, even for change for the better, we like to hold on to what was in the past, even if it was worse. So, you know, like a bad relationship, right? Oh yeah, but at least I had a relationship, right?
Right. Yeah. It's something. Right. And it's familiar.
Right. Right. So I love that. One of the things too, you say that when you're dealing with change, that it's all about people. And talk to me about that, because I think, you know, again, when I read John Cotter's stuff on leading change, it makes sense, right? Those steps make sense. But what's missing is bringing the people along with the change. I don't think he addresses that enough in his writings.
Yeah, one of the conversations I like to have with leaders when I'm first meeting them, and they say, you know, what can you do for us? And I say, well, you got some projects going on, don't you? Yeah, of course, we've got a few. Well, tell me, pick one in your mind, doesn't matter which one, but on a scale of 0 to 100, how much would you say that project is dependent on people? Mm. Now, that's a leading question. They could pick 1 or 99. It does not matter. The fact of the matter is you cannot get complete success or the returns you're looking for. And a lot of it for leaders is we're looking for a return. We want something back. You can't do that without the people factor. If folks don't do something or do something differently, you're just not going to get what you're looking for. And that opens the conversation to say, let's talk about the people dimension and how this can really work for you. Because it becomes the concern, all right, if I get it wrong, it's going to be a drag on getting what I want. That's true, but let's look at the other side where, what if this propelled you to the results you want even faster than you expected? And that's quite possible.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think when you bring your team along with the change, you're going to need them. You needed them in the past. You need them in the future, and you need them to come on board as well. So
right.
Yeah, I think you're right. And also to take advantage of the opportunities that come out of disruption, right? So when we leave the shore, the safety of shore, we're going to find things that are opportunities that we never expected. And you need your people there to help you take advantage of those opportunities.
But as you were saying, you know, many people are pretty comfortable on the beach. They'd rather stay there, soak up some rays. Yeah, it's getting a bit hot, but still, it's a nice place to be. And just dipping their toe in the water is a challenge for many, not understanding that, wow, there's so much out there that's unseen that does produce an opportunity. So, you know, I was thinking as you were talking, it's like that old crappy couch you got in the basement, but it's comfortable, right? It's form fit to me. You know, half the springs are missing, right? But I know it. So it does produce that sense of comfort until you experience the new couch with reclining features, right? So it takes a leader to really illustrate that future, paint a picture, and start to convince people it's worth taking a step and dipping that toe in the water, and you might experience something you weren't expecting. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that you said that the leader has to paint the picture. You know, you have to set, you know, a vision of what the future looks like after the change is done so that people can understand, you know, what it looks like when it's finished. I also read, I can't remember the author who mentioned that it's important that we as leaders tell people what's not going to change, you know? So I think give them something to hold on to as they're going through this is like, okay, you know, We're changing our ERP system, but what's not going to change is all you're going to remain in the same roles, and you're going to, you know, whatever. So there's certain things that stay the same, even though we're making a major change. And I think
100%.
It's important to give them something to hold on to.
Yeah, I know you're familiar with a lot of nautical metaphors. And one I use as well is the importance of the anchor. So when we consider even small changes at work, many people consider them to be quite chaotic. So you and I were talking a bit about ERP projects. So even if I make a minor change and the screen looks different, people wonder if they're going to lose their jobs. And I'm not exaggerating. That happens. So telling them what's not changing is really important. That's the anchor. Yes, we're changing some things, but some things are not changing. You can hold on to that and know it will be the same tomorrow, even as some other things change. Psychologically, that's really important to people as we're trying to guide them through these transitions.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So what's probably the most critical intervention that needs to happen during a transformational change?
Yeah, it's all about communication. I mean, there are many levers for change, but communication is huge. You know, one of the things that I've seen leaders do incorrectly is assume that sending out a memo, even if well-worded, describes, here's the change, that everyone got it. And I guarantee that most did not. And the big problem today is the level of distraction we have in our lives. Who reads a whole email? No one. We skim. And so we miss half the information. We assume we've got it. And then we'll ask our neighbor if we think we might have missed something. And of course, they filtered it as well. And all of a sudden, people have a completely different understanding of what you wanted them to understand. So communication, doing that well, and making it personal. I cannot count the number of times I've worked with an organization and they've said, we've got a communication strategy. We're going to blitz. And like, okay, that sounds good. And we're going to do it all by sending stuff out. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is all they have to read, or they have to go somewhere and listen to something. I'm always, you must run a live session, either pull to get them together, or like we're doing, get on a call where they can see you personally and the expression on your face as you explain it and have the opportunity to ask questions. It has to be a two-way street. So communication is huge. It has to be repetitive. It has to be multi-channel. And it has to allow for people to ask questions and escalate questions through their leadership as needed.
Yeah. What's the marketing message? You've got to tell people seven times you want to get the message across. Someone told me that about leadership. I mean, when I was still in my corporate days, and it always stood with me because I recognized that. And I started noticing, like, I put out a memo or I'd say something in an all-employee meeting, and I realized like maybe 10% of the workforce got it. Right. And it was just because we're busy and you go about your day and, you know, John said something in the meeting. I didn't really catch it. Did you catch it? No, I didn't catch it. So you almost have to repeat yourself in different formats, like you said. So right. Some, maybe it might be a memo, then it's an all employee meeting, then it's a face to face. And, but then what I like you said is really important is give people an opportunity to ask questions because they have concerns, they have questions. And if they never have that opportunity to voice their concerns, then the first thing I think is management's changing and no one's listening. That's the first thing to happen. You know, they don't have the opportunity to ask questions.
And you said something else important. You know, folks are busy, so they keep moving. And of course, this is very true for leaders as well. So if we're in the process of rolling out a change, we've done the communication, it feels like we've checked the box and therefore I'm moving on. So having a concerted effort, a very clear path for people to ask questions actually provides you with important feedback. If no one asks any questions, there's a problem.
Yes.
If people are asking questions that keep going to the same issue, that's a problem. But now you can address it. So these kinds of openings are very important as feedback mechanisms for leaders so that they can ensure they're getting people on track and moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. It's very important. I hope that leaders, are you listening in? That's really important to make sure that your communication is also two-way. That it's not just one way.
Right.
It needs to be a dialogue and not a monologue. So that's important. One of the things, you know, I've been through many change projects. We were talking about before I press record. Some have gone well. Some have been disasters. But one of the things that often happens is that we have to change course, right? So we made a commitment. We were going out of strategy. You know, we've left the shore and the conditions have changed. So either the scope changes, date changes. You know, we have to abandon the change. We have to go in a completely new direction. How do leaders have to handle that? Because at that point, you're saying trust me, and then you're saying, oh, by the way, we're going to go a different way. So how do leaders deal with those kind of circumstances?
Yeah, so we want to get in front of that so we don't have to say, oh, by the way. So I want to reiterate exactly what John said, because it's not a sometimes this happens, all the time this happens. Mm-hmm. You can pretty much assume on any project, there's going to be a modification. I say to my peers, it will not be on time. Big projects, it will not deliver on time. They never do. It's like when you hear about people having a new home built, they're never on time. Mm-hmm. So first of all, have that in mind. And then knowing that as an almost factual statement, in the beginning, you're going to tell people, we know there's going to be changes. Mm-hmm. This is the direction. Here's where we go as of today. But assume there's going to be some changes along the way. So now I've created a mindset, I hope, in my audience that recognizes, okay, So I'm going to have to pay attention and listen for the changes. But there's a second part that's critical with this. And that's, I said how important communication was. It has to have a cadence. So it needs to be regular. So not only is it factual that there will be some changes along the way, but we're committing to you that, let's say, on the first of every month, there'll be an update. And if there's nothing to tell you, then we'll tell you there's nothing to tell you. But if something's changed, you will know on the first of every month. I stress the importance of cadence because that structure is part of bringing order out of chaos. So just like we talked about the anchor, when people perceive change and go, oh my goodness, my life is out of control. Everything is going to be different. I don't know what it's going to mean for me. The fact that I know some things that aren't changing and I'm going to get updates on a very regular basis, I can expect it, reduces the feeling of anxiety. So it's very important for people during change.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
As a leader, you're responsible for the mission and the people assigned to you. Regardless of the size of your team, employees are depending on you for their lives and careers. For the sake of your team and the people who entrust you with this role, you need to master the skills to become a great leader. Best-selling leadership author John Rennie is proud to introduce the Qualified Leadership Book Series. This new series teaches you how to become a people-centered leader. Great leaders know that employees who are respected, appreciated, and allowed to grow will go the extra mile. These books provide real-world leadership wisdom written from a hands-on perspective. If you want to be a more effective leader, this is the one book series you should read this year. This three-book series contains the following best-selling leadership books: I Have the Watch, You Have the Watch, and All in the Same Boat, for one low price of $39.99. Begin your journey to become a leader worth following. Go to johnsrennie.com and get your order in today.
This episode is brought to you by Leader Connect, a leadership training company and video platform founded by the leadership book author and Deep Leadership Podcast guest, Neil Jurd. Leader Connect is a video and podcast streaming platform for leaders and teams. Watch it alone or as a team, and each video supports you and your team, allowing you to improve performance and build a great culture. Join hundreds of experts and learn about leadership, planning, public speaking, team building, mindfulness, and a range of other subjects that will help you lead well and build a great team. I'm proud to say that I'm one of the experts on this platform. Leader Connect is offering a 10% discount to all Deep Leadership listeners. Go to leader-connect.co.uk and enter the code DEEP at checkout. Master your leadership with Leader Connect.
This episode is brought to you by Ignite Management Services. Ignite is led by Mike Watson, who you might remember from episode 137. Mike and his team believe that everything starts with leadership, whether it's strategy execution or cultural transformation. It's the role of the leader to create the conditions for their people to succeed. The team at Ignite can help you develop critical habits to enhance your leadership capability and transform your business. Ignite Management is now offering the Resilient Leadership Assessment Tool. This is an online questionnaire designed to assess and guide leadership development, coaching, and team building. It provides leaders an opportunity to gain insights into their leadership strengths and development needs. After taking this assessment, you will receive a custom detailed report that provides practical and actionable recommendations to enhance your effectiveness. I have taken this assessment myself and found it to be extremely valuable in helping me make changes to my leadership approach. Right now, Ignite is offering 15% off the price of this tool to the Deep Leadership audience. Go to ignitemanagement.ca and enter the code START15 at checkout to get started today. No, I really like that. Get out in front of it. Cadence calls, that's really important. I mean, just to say, look, it's not going to go as we predict. There's likely going to be changes. We're doing something that's never been done before. We're doing something that's very difficult. And I like getting ahead of that. I think that's really, really important. It reminds me of a story. So I was shutting down a manufacturing plant and moving it into another location. And we were building an addition. So we had a year and a half to build the addition. Then the CEO came to me and said, we need to accelerate it. We need to have it done in 6 months. Well, I said to the CEO, well, that's not going to happen because the building won't be done. And he's like, you need to figure it out. And I remember coming back to tell my team that we now had 6 months to move the plant And they were like, well, where are we going to move it to? And I said, I don't know. Right. But I just remember that they're all looking at me like, this is crazy, you know. What's interesting about that story is that the team figured out a plan. They figured out a way that we could lease a local manufacturing space. We could move the line exactly as it was in the other plant, move it right in and go fast. They come up with a plan to move fast. And we developed techniques that we never had before. And we were able to meet the CEO's commitment. But what's great is that when you sometimes find yourself in those where things are going to shift, and that sometimes your people get super creative and they come up with solutions that you never even thought were possible. So, and the only thing I wish I did right, or I did that right, but what I didn't do was get in front of it and said, hey, by the way, you know, something might change to this year and a half schedule we have. And I didn't do that.
To reduce that shock factor when it
would have reduced the shock factor, because the looks on their faces like, well, how are we going to do this? And I was like, I'm not really sure, you know? Mm-hmm. And every change project, I love how you said it, is going to have some major disruption that you're going to have to deal with. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, true.
You know, I was a witness to that. So for sure. What do leaders commonly get wrong when they're rolling out a change like we're talking about?
So we're chatting a bit about, you know, the fact that leaders are busy, and that, you know, if you don't have something in place to get feedback, you might miss it. But I want to go beyond that and talk about, you have to be very intentional around now going to get the feedback. So, okay, questions are coming in. We're answering those, feeling good about that. But there's still a difference between that and going out and talking to people. So whether it's just picking up the phone and by the way, I love manufacturing. So going out on the floor, chatting with people, because a lot of those folks have no filters, but they're super friendly, right?
Yeah.
And they'll tell you the way it is and what they really think and what people are talking about. And there's a line I give every leader to say, use this a lot. So John, if I was talking to you, and who knows, maybe you're a little concerned about talking to me, the leader, and telling me that maybe folks are in support of what's happening. So the line is, tell me, what do you think is on people's minds about the project? And what I've done is deflect the focus from you to what you think about what other people are saying.
Mm.
Now, when John responds to me, is he going to tell me what is on his mind? Absolutely, he is.
Yeah.
But he's got a little bit of a safety zone now of, yeah, you know, what I'm hearing is, but I make the assumption he's going to tell me what's important to him. And now I'm getting feedback around some concerns, if there are any, around the project and how it's going. So, you know, creating that safe space for people to give feedback is good. I think you do have to be live with individuals, create some comfort, and then just, you know, give me some feedback. What's happening?
I like that. I mean, you're going to eventually deal with people that are going to be resistant to change, and then some won't buy into the change.
Yes.
What do you do with those kind of people that just won't buy into what's happening?
So building on your previous question around what do leaders sometimes get wrong, this is one of the big ones.
Mm.
I'm going to start with a very important piece of advice. Assume that resistance exists on a continuum. It's not black and white. So I mentioned we've got the fight or flight response, but there's also flourish. There's another F word in here. Don't worry. It's freeze.
Okay.
Right? So some people look change in the eye and they freeze.
Mm.
Now, are they resistant? Now, our leader might think so because you're not doing what I asked you to do. And fear plays a real role in people not stepping up to change. Well, I'm concerned that if I try this, I'm going to fail.
Mm.
And who wants to fail in front of their peers? No one. That's one of the biggest motivations for people not embracing change, that I'm afraid I'm going to do something wrong. I'll look stupid. I'll hurt myself, depending on what it is. People don't want to do that. So when leaders make the assumption that resistance is an on-off, if you're not doing it, then you're against me. You don't like this project. That could be true. But first, we need to get with people and say, what's going on? Help me understand. Let me reiterate what we're looking for. Maybe you didn't understand it. Again, so many messages get lost in the mix. So let me re-explain. Let me help you understand why. Do you need some more support? Do you need some additional training? What's getting in the way? What's a barrier? There's so many potential barriers for people embracing change. So first we have to understand. I think it was Covey that was seek first to understand, then to be understood. So getting inside their heads, understanding their context, and then how can I help you embrace this before we determine its resistance?
I love that. I love that you say it's on a scale. It's not necessarily black and white. Cause I think when I just look at my own personal side, when change comes, I'm one of the ones that I don't jump on board right away. I sit back and go, all right, so this is coming. Let's see if it's real, you know? And then all right, okay. It seems like it's real. All right. Where are we headed? Like, I want to try to understand it before I jump on board. So I'm not one of the early embracers of change. I'm always maybe I'm a second follower or whatever. I'm not a first follower.
Me too. I'm like, you go first.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Some people are just diving. Oh, this is great. We're gonna move factories. Great. This is exciting. You know, I'm always like, all right, I'm thinking about this is going to be a lot of work. Is this true? Are we really going to do this? Are we really going to spend the money? You know, I want to understand it first. And I think, again, that's not resistance. It's just the way I'm processing change. I do it differently than other people. Everyone's going to deal with change differently.
Yeah, absolutely. John, you'll love this. There's an exercise I do with leaders and other people. So they don't really know me yet. I stand up in front of the audience and I say, before anything, can I have a volunteer? And what do you think I get?
No headlights,
right? No one, right? And so after, you know, say 30, 60 seconds, someone eventually, you know, puts their hand up and say, come on up. And then what you do is you present them with a gift. They don't have to do anything. Here's a gift card. Thank you very much. Go sit down. And then you say, can I have another volunteer? And guess what happens?
Every end.
So what's the difference between volunteer one and volunteer two? Someone already dipped their toe in the water. They already took a step forward. They saw that it was safe. They saw that you didn't criticize them, right? So that's a reality you're pointing out of, I need to see others step up. And that can be a strategy for leaders of, can I find some people that are always gung-ho, they got on board, and can I get them engaged? Because then they become an influencer, and we know how important influencers are, and get them out in front, and then they'll talk to some people, and all of a sudden the word starts to spread that, hey, it's going to be okay.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. It's just, once someone else has already sort of, you know, survived stepping forward, then like, oh, okay, well, it's not so bad. So, you know, someone stuck their neck out and it wasn't too bad. They didn't get cut off. So they're like, oh, it's not too bad. But I like that idea. And I think it helps bring people along. The more that you see, okay, well, you know, Joe did it, you know, Jim did it, Susan did it. Oh, it can't be that bad, right?
Right.
At least. And then the rumor, which is the most effective communication tool in any business, rumor mill hits that, okay, it's okay. We can do this. It's you know, so that's important. Yeah, I like that. So, you know, this new book is set, you know, talking about what happened during the pandemic, which was like a major shift, a major global change that happened.
Yes.
And there was opportunities, there were threats, there were everything you imagine hit us all at once. I was a small business owner. I still am through the pandemic. I didn't know what was going on. My people said, what's going on? What do we need to do?
Right.
One of the things is that you mentioned is that global leaders failed to get compliance across the board. I mean, so we had some simple things they were trying to do and they failed. Can you give us some, you know, feel for why we failed? And what are some basic things we got wrong during the pandemic that we can learn?
Yeah, and I think it's worth mentioning that because a lot of people are like, oh my goodness, I don't want to talk about the pandemic anymore. I totally get that.
Yeah.
But I couldn't ignore it because it was a global change. I mean, if you want to look at an example of change that we were trying to do on the largest scale possible, this was it.
Yeah.
And then we take three simple changes that were part of it. Simple, I'll put in quotes.
Yeah.
Number one, stay 6 feet apart.
Yeah.
Wear a mask. Two. Three, sanitize all the time. So I'm like, well, that's pretty simple. Keep your distance and wear a mask. Okay, and I can make sure my hands are clean. But then you start digging into it. And I think one of the reasons this failed is it just assumed that everyone could do this easily. Mm-hmm. And then you run into supply issues. Not everyone can get a mask. Half the people forget it when they go into the grocery store. Then you need people to actually enforce the rules, and that creates conflict. You've got folks with medical conditions that make it difficult to wear a mask. Everyone forgets to do 6 feet apart, and then all of a sudden someone's angry with you, and there isn't enough room in the stores to do 6 feet apart. Like it got complicated so quickly, but the message was very simple. Just do these three things and we'll all be safe. And yeah. It just wasn't. And then some responded by, well, then let's add on more rules. Well, no one can remember more than three things. So now you have a problem. So it had to take more work from governments, from leaders to actually facilitate applying these rules. And it's much more complicated than they expected. I think they didn't do their homework a lot of ways of considering who are all the different groups of stakeholders we have out there and how might they respond. You have to do some prediction and get into people's shoes and talk to them and say three things. Where do you see the potential barriers? And now you can get ahead of the barriers before they really come up and bite you.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think one of the things that we fail to do as leaders is the why. You know, answer the question, why? You know, you say we have to stand 6 feet apart, why? You know, you say we got to do why? I don't think we did a good enough job connecting the dots. And that's why there was a lot of people saying, well, that, you know, I can't, or I don't, or that doesn't make any sense. Or, you know, there was a lot of people pushing back. And one of the things that I say, and that came out of the pandemic, it's like a phrase I took from the pandemic is, and see what you think about it. I say forced compliance leads to defiance. So when we say you must, like, as a leader, if I say you must wear your seatbelt on a forklift, you might get people to do it. But if right. you explain, I want you to wear your seatbelt on the forklift because if it tips over, you won't get crushed. You'll be maintained in there. And I don't want you to get hurt. There's a why there between, you know, between wear your seatbelt and the why behind why I want you to wear your seatbelt. It's because I
absolutely
care.
Absolutely true. And then we find, even when you give the why, some people won't do it. And what it comes down to there is people don't like being told what to do, even if you tell me why. So we saw this with the pandemic, especially. It was, you're restricting my personal freedoms. I need to have choice.
Yeah.
And so I will enforce my right to choose by saying no. And organizations with leaders, sometimes we do have to say, I'm going to give you the why. If you choose not to, these are the consequences.
Yeah.
Much harder to do in the public forum because people do have freedom to choose.
Yeah.
But inside our organizations, we do have to draw some hard lines sometimes, especially when it comes to safety, like you were just saying.
Yeah. I think too, the other thing too, just given those three things was, you know, our thoughts evolved throughout the pandemic, right? In the beginning, we were concerned about, you know, contact with hands and what have you. And it changed over time. We realized that wasn't the way it passed.
Right.
We didn't say shift gears, you know, hey guys, we've learned now this isn't a problem. And really we need to be focused on these other things that are more important. We just sort of kept enforcing rules, even though, you know, there was science coming out saying that it wasn't through contact trace. So I just felt, I think for me at least, just as a casual observer of human behavior, which I love just to watch people, is that there were a lot of people that were just trying to prove everything the government was saying was wrong. It was just an interesting thing. Right. It was just this defiance that was so overwhelming, which was wild. But I just think we didn't take a humble enough approach where we said, okay, we've realized we don't have to worry about this. You know, if we don't have to worry about this, we need to shift our focus on this. Like, you know, ventilators in the beginning, we said, oh, everybody's got to be on a ventilator. Then we said, that's not really the issue, you know? So I don't know. I think it goes back to what we're talking about is that conditions are going to change and be aware that things are going to change and we'll let you know if things change. And I don't think we did enough of that, you know?
Agreed. I need to point out one other thing that happened during the pandemic, which I think is illustrative of what leaders sometimes need to do. And we won't touch the politics around this.
Yes.
But at some point, Biden got out and went door to door and asked people to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
And they did.
Yeah.
So again, leave the politics out. But sometimes leaders need to go out and go door to door and talk to people and make the personal request. I think that's just reality of who we are as human beings. When you're now in front of me, it's much more personal. I'm now focused on you. I'm listening. And you have a much greater probability of convincing me that, hey, this is something you shouldn't do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree 100%. I every time, you know, I would hear some sort of problem during the pandemic, I used to say, Well, it's my first pandemic. I've never been through one of these before. But you know what I mean? Because we didn't really know what to do, but you're right. You know, like the things that make sense with leading change, which is get out in front of it, spend time with people, understand, you know, being able to explain the why. These are all big parts of change efforts that we kind of messed up on. And when we did some things right, but we also did a lot of things that were kind of wrong as well. So,
very true.
One of the things that we were talking about before we press record was the idea that, you know, change projects used to be one a year, you know, and, you know, you had one big project, you know, that you might do over 18 months. And now it seems like change is almost constant, whether it's global events, whether it's, you know, we've had supply chain disruptions, we've had pandemics, we have all these things that are hitting us at the same time. How should we be thinking about that as leaders, as far as it's not just a one and done change project, like a John Cotter model, which is it's now continuous. How do we prepare people, train people, build an organization that can deal with change on a regular basis?
I think it number one is setting that expectation again. So no one would disagree with the fact that change is now continuous. It is happening all the time. And there's never a downtime within organizations. We finish one project, we'll take a break. You cannot. Everything moves too quickly. And if you take a break, you may be left behind. So it's working with the workforce. I do more work myself now of how do you generate resilience. So it is a mindset shift is number one of it is going to be continuous. And then acknowledging that, how do I best prepare for it? And often now I'm diving down into the details of how do you manage yourself? So what is stress management? How do you make sure you come to work every day with a full battery, you know, ready to deal with whatever comes up? Because when that curveball comes, and it's going to come, it's going to drain you. So think about what can you do during the day to replenish? So we get right down into individual tactics that you can use, and they are stress management tactics to replenish, refresh. Because when your body or your brain is tired, you can't make good decisions, and one more change is going to push over the edge. So we have to get people good at refreshing themselves, and that's resilience.
I love that. I love that. Make sure you come to work with a full battery. And there's ways to do it. If you lead yourself, people, if you're taking care of yourself physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, then you can come into work with a full battery and be able to deal with the changes that are coming. So being more resilient is really important.
We have to add to that, because some leaders will be thinking, is that really my domain of responsibility? Do I have to help people with that? It seems like overkill. And I think the answer is a modified yes. It's to some degree. If you want the performance, the high performance out of people, then it's a vested interest you have in helping them as much as possible. It doesn't mean you have to become a therapist. I was reading about one organization in the UK where they have a director of happiness. Mm. And she says a full third of her time is spent helping employees refinance things. So mortgage got out of control, cell phone is too expensive, I've got a loan that I can't pay. So she'll get them connected with credit counseling services and renegotiate. Because there's recognition that you're carrying all those concerns, the weight of those pressures with you into the workplace. And now you can't focus on other things. I can't get 100% of you when you've got 50% thinking about how I'm going to pay the next bill. So it is about vested interest. No, you don't have to be a therapist, but I think expressing empathy, understanding what people are struggling with, and pointing them towards resources where you can or where appropriate, that's good leadership.
I agree 100%. Yeah, fantastic. What final message would you like to leave with our listeners on this subject of dancing with disruption?
Well, if you accept the fact that we're always dealing with change, I encourage all leaders, think about what you've been through over the last 3 months, 12 months, and write down the stories of people embracing change, overcoming challenges, so that you can remind them when the next one comes of how they got over a previous hurdle. Organizations are doing this all the time. Like we said, projects are always rolling out and they're never perfect,
never.
So the fact that individuals step up, groups step up, they make something out of what was a potential disaster. we have to remind them that they are resilient. They can be successful during change. And the skills that they had yesterday, they still have today and can make them successful going forward.
I love that. We talk a lot about storytelling and the importance of stories. You know, write down the stories as you go through these, and you're going to have them for the future, because guess what? The future is going to change. Just like you're saying, it's not predictable. And we have no idea what's going to happen over the next 24 months. So, and I guarantee you, at least when it comes to the United States, we have an election coming up. And usually it's craziness during our election year. So I might come up to Canada with you just to get away from it.
You'd be welcome anytime.
Right. I just want to wait for the snow to melt. So
fair enough. Soon, very soon.
Well, this has been fantastic. Jeff, how can people find out more about you, your company, and this new book?
I encourage you to go to my website, jeffskipperconsulting.com. There's not many skippers out there. I've tried to contact as many of them as I can just to say hello. But Jeff Skipper Consulting will get you there. Info about the book is right on the front page, and services that I offer. Lots of freebies there for downloads if you're interested in improving your skills around leading change.
Oh, absolutely. That's such great news. Again, the book is called Dancing with Disruption, and this is talking about how do we lead change more effectively as leaders to be able to deal with change. Jeff shared with us a lot of great information. And if there's something in it that you heard and you were a little confused, or you have some questions, please follow the links that we've got in the show notes here and reach out to Jeff. Jeff's an expert in this. He's been doing it a long time. And that's why we do these podcasts, so you can get resources that you can reach out to and be able to solve some of your toughest challenge. Again, one of the toughest challenges is leading change, and you're going to have to do it as a leader. So again, I highly encourage you to follow up with Jeff, get this book, reach out to him, and learn how to do it better. So Jeff, I want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing your knowledge on this very important topic.
You are very welcome. Thank you, John.
Thank you. Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Deep Leadership. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and share so we can continue to build a world with better bosses. Until next time, this is John Rennie saying take care and lead well.
Thank you for listening to Deep Leadership.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you for all you do.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. For more information and updates, please visit our website at www.deepleadershippodcast.com or johnsrennie.com. Until next time, take care.
I'm DC. I host the Rock Podcast, Back to the Arena, The Interviews. It's about a 30-minute podcast where I talk one-on-one with a band who has released new music. You can find us on all the best podcast sites like Spotify, Apple, Google, iHeartRadio, and more. If you're a rock fan like me, subscribe today to Back to the Arena, The Interviews.
Electric Acid.
Are you passionate about saving the planet for future generations? Do you want to learn how to do it? If yes, then you need to tune in to the Nature Backed podcast. It's a talk show covering the changing world around us, from renewable energy, sustainable agriculture, circular economy, to ESG and social innovation. Don't miss this opportunity to discover how you can join the movement and make a difference. Subscribe to the Nature Backed podcast today on your favorite platform and get ready to be amazed.